From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office, so no update to the commodity markets this afternoon. However, we will hear an excerpt from the December Farm Assets Conference, where Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist Emeritus, presented on crops issues related particularly to the 2023 growing season and the kinds of things he saw then and expectations for 2024. You can find more from the Farm Assets Conference on our website at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
As we get started for the day, a reminder that the All Day Ag Outlook is just 1 week from today at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I hope to see you there, but you'll need to have your ticket. You can buy those now at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Should be a great day. For the $40, your lunch is included. Again, willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, let's pick up from the Farm Assets Conference presentation on crops. Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist Emeritus, joined us on stage.
I don't have any farm assets, so I'll make this quick. Todd said I had 10 minutes, and I have about 10 slides, so no problem. I told him I only talked 3 or 4 minutes each, so it should work out. Well, I'm glad to see that the miscanthus is mostly in Iowa, and I'm all in favor of as much miscanthus in Iowa as possible. So I'll just put that on the... I'm just kidding, Emily. I do think that there's some possibilities with things that we could put here. One of the problems we have, though, and it came live this last year when we had dry weather and... You know, it's not the first year this has been the case, but around here, our land with a little bit of slope that was not the flat back black lowest lying. You'd think in a dry year like this, those low-lying places would have really been the most productive. They weren't. And what we saw, and this is our, you know, this is their, oops. This is the drought map here in the middle of July. You know, we were, Illinois was lit up like a Christmas tree all year long with drought, dry weather and drought. And this is during the prime time. If you showed me this and didn't show me anything else, I'd say, man, that must have been a tough year for corn. Because that's exactly the time you don't want it to be dry. It wasn't. And we have, I put down here the yield, the last symbol here, the one I made larger, is for this year projected yields. They might actually go up a little bit, I suspect, for corn, but they're right on trend line, just over 200. And, you know, this is 2 years in a row now where we had very dry weather, we had drought stress, we had conditions during early pollination, going into pollination that, you know, people looked at this and just sort of shake our heads. We have to change what we think of now as a sort of ideal year for corn and soybeans. And it doesn't matter very much. In fact, you know, I won't say the drier the June, the better, but it was very dry this year in May and June and July, all had below normal rainfall. What we have today is hybrids and soybean varieties that have outstanding root systems. They've just been bred for yield, and this has come with that breeding for yield, relentless breeding for yield, I call it. And you can't do that in rain-fed corn and soybeans and not develop a highly competent root system. And it took us through this. If you look at the water balances here, it's like, well, I don't think that was possible. You know, we had some of the highest yields again this year that we've ever had in many places in Illinois. And it certainly didn't look like the year to have that. I put the crop ratings up there just to show that they don't mean anything. You know, Gary Schnitke said that back in June. He said, June ratings don't mean anything. Well, they didn't mean a heck of a lot in July and August either. Because, you know, they kind of work their way up once people start to harvest and say, hey, this is really good. Oh, let's increase the crop rating. why we're raiding the crop of corn and soybeans, the middle of September. I'm not quite sure what that means at that point, but it all stood. It had excellent pollination under sketchy conditions. We got bailout rains, two of them, one in late June, early July, one in about the second week of August. The first one made the corn crop, the second one made the soybean crop. So it's sort of like we talk about, except we don't normally talk about it being able to do that when it was dry before that. And in the middle of July, this crop, we've come to expect now sort of miraculous things, and we saw them again this year. By the way, I was talking to Todd about that. If you're into numerology, every 10 years, we have an outstanding year for corn. It started in 1984, I was here. On this one, I started this in 90, but 2004, 2014, these were both excellent years. They set new yield records. So we've set new yield records, 94, 1984, 94, 04, and 14. We set a new yield record each year. What's next year? 24. So put that in your marketing cookbook and see where it gets. Soybeans, it's harder to see, but it was pretty much the same thing. The yields of the two kind of moved together, except for drought, which we had there in 2012, of course, and soybeans withstood it better. So that's kind of where we're at with this. And, it really is something that has changed a great deal in my 40-plus years here, watching this crop. A year like this year, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, would have been just a devastation. And we would have had all kinds of problems, including standability problems. We'll talk more about that. So cover crops were an issue, and I'm talking about issues here. Cover crops were a problem for corn in some fields in 2023 and in other dry years. This was a shot I took here at South Farm in about the second week of June or so. And I just put some data up there. I'm not going to dwell on it too much, but whether we had no-till, we had one pass, and we had strip-till with and without cover crop, and cover crop dinged the yields in each case. And that happened over a four-year study. This was the last year of the four-year study. One other one I threw here just for your pondering and interest. We've been running planting date studies in Illinois for quite a while, and over at Monmouth, we've got a set of about 15 of these now, starting back a while back, and I just divided them into four periods here. The ones that are dashed lines up there, and there were four of them in the last 10 years or so, those are ones where planting date, and we start in the middle of April, or before the middle of April, and we plant until after about the last week of May, first week of June. Four of those times, there's been no significant effect of planting date on yield. They weren't the low-yielding ones either. 2022 is the one that's at the top there. Can you imagine that? We planted the first week of June or the end of May for those 2 years and got over 250 bushels per acre. What does this mean for our management? You shouldn't have bought such a big planter. I'm just kidding. Everything you did in terms of management was good. But I think we probably have overestimated the danger of planting. Not late, but just late. 2019 is in here. We did have some big drop-offs in a few of those years, as you can see. This last year, you can't see this very well up here, but I put this year, 2023, in there. And it's one of those. It's the second one from the top, actually, on the left, but it dropped off there at the end. Some of that had to do with tar spot coming in. That's one of the issues. In 2021, we had quite a bit of loss, and the later plantings got dinged worse than the early plantings. So that's one thing that we can keep in mind. I'm going to talk just about nitrogen, my favorite topic, but just a little bit. This was quite a year for nitrogen. That one on the left is from Champaign County. I haven't put a curve like I normally do on this because I'm not quite sure how to do that. But basically, you know, the lowest rate here was 58 pounds of nitrogen, and it yielded about 185. And 50 pounds more of nitrogen up to 108 yielded 280. And then we didn't get any yield increases beyond that. That's pretty unusual, but we had a tremendous supply of nitrogen coming from the soil this year, and it shows. The one on the right is a little bit more consistent with what we've seen in many trials. That one would be pretty typical. You can see there that I put a yellow triangle where the optimum, where the last pound of nitrogen just paid for itself and adding yield. And you can see there at about 175 pounds of nitrogen, it yielded about 265. And that's not unusual either. The old idea that you put, you know, if you expect 250 or 200 bushel yields, you put 240, and then corn after soybean, you subtract 40. The old yield-based system, it's dead, and we have to quit using it. The hybrid increases in yield we've had with genetic improvements have made these things better at everything, and that includes taking up nitrogen from the soil. And it really helps when we have a dry June and the roots just grow, and they pull water up from below. I don't call them big root systems. Big root systems cost the plant too much. They're just really, really competent root systems, well connected to the soil so they can pull water from deeper in the soil. This is another one with nitrogen on it. I just threw this one in southern Illinois. One farmer was ambitious. He did nitrogen trials, but he said he wanted to try two different populations with a hybrid, and he planted 31,000 and 36,000. Well, do you see from there which curve is the high one? It's the lower population. This idea that you can put more plants on and then you have to put more nitrogen on, it doesn't really work that way. This is happenstance. In a good year, you wouldn't see these two being very different. But this year, certainly, population is not something that we continue to talk about increase. And I think the average drop seeding rate in Illinois has probably not been increasing very much. And I think that's fully appropriate. I had to show you the one on the right. This is over at our research center at Monmouth this year. Last year it looked sort of like this, but this year it was even more like this. We had 233 bushels per acre with no nitrogen, corn following soybean. And so this is a nitrogen rate trial, and you can see the triangle there. At 115 pounds of nitrogen, we had 309 bushels per acre. So you know, 233 pounds, I just take one bushel equals 1 pound of nitrogen. That's pretty close to what the crop takes up. That's not what we harvest, but it's what the crop needs as its greatest nitrogen content during the season. Usually comes two-thirds of the way through grain fill or something like that. We still have green leaves. They give a lot of their nitrogen back to the crop, to the grain, but not all of it. So at 1 pound per bushel, that means 233 pounds of nitrogen in this case came from the soil. Is that even possible? Absolutely, it's possible. We've seen them over 200 before. I don't know that I ever saw one this high. But those soils, those silt loam soils, prairie soils there can do this. And what does that mean? Well, the rest of it, 76 pounds of nitrogen, that's what we got from fertilizer. That's why when you look at this, you say, well, it took 115 pounds. What do you mean only 76 came from the fertilizer? Yeah. The soil supply is what's there, and the crop takes it up. It's got first dibs on it. It's where the roots are, everything. So it takes it up first. And we can think of the fertilizer we put on as sort of the supplement to what the soil is supplying. And it makes a lot of sense when you think of it that way. So we won't say too much more about that, but you know, I'm just giving you a quick overview here. Pivot Bio, Prove N40, I'm sure many of you heard about this. We've been doing a little bit of just sort of casual work with it in the last couple of years. The first question we had when it said it can fix 40 pounds of nitrogen, up to 40 pounds of nitrogen for the crop was, well, there's a way to test that. Put low rates of nitrogen on and see if it improves yield by increasing the N supply. Our answer that we have, and this is 12 Illinois trials averaged together, at zero it doesn't, it reduces it a little bit. At 50 and 100 pounds, it reduces it a little bit as well, reduces the yield. Is it possible that this actually reduces the yield? It's said to have some effect on roots, and so, you know, if that's a possibility, I suppose, if it makes the root systems bigger and hungrier and thirstier early on, maybe it can reduce the yield. I don't know. We have certainly not seen anything that tells us that you can cut back on your nitrogen rate if you use this product, unless you're already using a high rate of nitrogen. 150 at 150 pounds of nitrogen, there wasn't any difference at all. And that was true at the higher nitrogen rates as well. So my conclusion was most who apply too much nitrogen could cut back without paying for the privilege. In other words, you don't need an additive. You can just use less. So enough on that. Where's this high yields and resilience coming from? It's coming from genetics. And I'm one, you know, agronomist coming up and saying, well, the breeders, they need our help. We'll tell them what to do, what we need. And they said, sure. All we need is yield and go away. So we went away, but we're all beneficiaries of this now. What I did in this, I took a variety trial. We've got about, scattered through central Illinois, we've had 6 of them in recent years. We've just cut that down to 4 now. But I took the highest yielding one each year, and I took the average of the top 10 highest yielding hybrids at each site each year, at the best site each year. So it's not perfect, but it's my way to say, what's the genetic potential? In other words, you take the best place you can find and you take the best hybrids that were there that year. And you can see that that line's been going up at a little over 3 bushels on corn, a little over 3 bushels per acre per year. This last year, we had the highest one we've ever had. That was, again, that Monmouth site. And I think one of the hybrids there yielded 340-something this year. And down at the bottom, I just put the Illinois yields. And they've been growing over that same period at about 2.6. So we're certainly at a point where genetics are providing at least enough to bring our yields along like they are. Does that mean the management doesn't have anything to do with it? Yeah, we're generally managing these, but it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, that throwing a bunch of extra plants or a bunch of extra nitrogen and this sort of thing out there is going to pay off. It does mean that what the basis for these continual increases, though, I think is genetic. The same thing is true a little less dramatically in soybeans. And we've had some, you know, averages over 90. This last 2 years, not. It happens, so happens. And our yields statewide over that period have been going up a little over a bushel per acre per year. We had an oddity, and I just threw this in because we could. Dan Schaefer over here, he reported to me on a field in Piatt County back in July that there were some oddities with ears there, and there really were. This was what we decide to call ear tassels, but the end of the ear, and you probably have seen this in sweet corn, it sort of turned into a tassel on the end. I won't say the company, but they have an ear logo that the ear flies. And so I'm not going to talk to you very much about this, but we calculated yields. We took these because we wanted to see, there's always been this fascination, if you have low kernel numbers, for example, poor pollination, you know, low kernel numbers, do the kernels just get bigger enough to compensate for it? So this was a natural way. This was, by the way, an individual problem with an individual version of a hybrid. Pretty sure we won't see this next year. It wasn't, you know, this certainly wasn't the only field that had it in it. It was a problem with that hybrid. And I'm not going to say very much more about it. We just went out, and because we could, we took 100 ears or so and just shelled them and took the kernel weights. And I got the, I'm just showing you there that, you know, grain weight per ear in pounds and kernels per ear. They had a kind of correlation, but it leveled off at some point. The kernels, the answer to the question was, yes, the kernels got bigger, but not enough bigger to make them full-size ears. Short corn, that's on everybody's mind. I took the picture on the left last year, 2022, and just noticed, you know, when we were out there, this was after pollination, there was a fair amount of sunlight hitting the ground. The talk now is that you may need more plants and maybe narrower rows or something like that. The one on the right I took in plots down at South Farm this last summer, and one of the issues this last summer, actually both summers, was that the tall corn on the right, you know, was not that much taller than the short corn on the left. The big difference in the two, if you look closely at it, was that the ear placement on the left was, you know, maybe 27 or 8 inches above the soil surface. And so that's going to be an ongoing challenge with these. We'll see what companies say. I've not seen very much data yet, and I think it's still a possibility that these could see limited release. Well, you know, one that's always the first question of the spring is, should we start planting corn or soybeans first? And my answer is yes. Whichever makes sense. And in February and usually in March, that's neither one. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
That's Emerson Napsicker, Extension Agronomist from the University of Illinois, and joined us for the Farm Assets Conference, which kicked off our winter meeting season. That was in December. We'll wrap up our winter meeting season, by the way, next week on Tuesday, the 5th day of March, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I hope you will join us on that date. The cost is just $40, but you need to register today at willag.org.